guys.
Well, I got these because they were pretty valuable.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Transportation Policy and Transit Policy and Oversight Committee. We have several bills today, and I'd like to get started on time. I do really appreciate everyone who is on time. And as I said at the beginning, we're hearing bills now kind of wall to wall, and we do really want to get going. So our first bill today is House File 486, Representative Eastland. I saw him earlier. Here he is.
Good afternoon,
Eastland. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here.
I guess if somebody would move the bill, I guess, but I would like to make an oral amendment if possible.
Okay, let's. I'll move that House File 486 be recommended to pass and go directly to the General Register, and then we'll hear your author's amendment.
Okay, and the amendment that I'd like to have put on the bill would be just to delete Section 1.
Okay. Does everybody? I'll move that as well. Does everyone understand the oral amendment deleting Section 1? Are there any questions to the amendment? Do you want to explain why you're doing that, Representative Eastland?
Okay, I have Eric Rudin here with me that can maybe tell you a little bit about why the amendment.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and we've just decided to correct the route description for Trunk Highway 101 through a commissioner's order rather than through legislation. And so that's why we'd like to delete Section 1 from the bill.
Any questions to the amendment? So all in favor of the oral amendment to delete Section 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. The motion prevails. And now we have the bill in the shape that the author would like it. So you can proceed, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the bill does basically is it finishes some work that needs to be done in some in MnDOT's book to be able to get some highway stretches of highway or some roads that are no longer necessary in our state trunk highway system that need to be turned back to the local communities. And I'll ask Mr. Rodine to also explain what those are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 2 of the bill will turn back a portion of highway in Cass County that formerly served as state hospitals to the county. And then Section 3 of the bill would do something very similar in the city of Cambridge, a section of highway that formerly served a state hospital. And I believe you have copies of the resolutions from the county board and the city council in your packets. And on the backs of those resolutions, there's a small map showing the segments of highway that will be turned back. So those are the bills, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rudin. Any questions of the committee? Okay, hearing none, do you have any final comments for the evening?
Nope.
Thank you very much. I'll renew my motion then that we pass the, as amended, House File 486 to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed. The motion prevails. Thank you very much. I want to take this opportunity to welcome some ninth grade students we have here from St. Louis Park High School. So welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. And I don't know how long you're staying, but you might have a chance to view your Representative Simon in action today on an issue that probably is very relevant to you, the online, taking your driver's ed classes online. So I don't know how long you'll stay, but you did pick an interesting day to be with us, and you have your state rep here. So we have one bill that we're going to do before that one, however. Representative Detmer, House File 672. And Representative Detmer, I know, has some other committee obligations, so we want to try to expedite his bill as quickly as possible. And I believe you have an amendment, Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I have an amendment, A090073.
Okay, I think we have to wait, apparently. This just came up. It's being printed. Okay.
Okay.
Well, why don't you just to move things along, I'll move that House File 672 be recommended to pass, and we'll send that directly to the General Register as well. But we're going to, of course, have another motion for your amendment. But why don't you explain what you've got?
Mr. Chair and committee members, basically the bill modifies the transit service bus provision in, number one, allow Minnesota Department of Transportation to authorize use of shoulders of divided highways throughout the state by transit buses of certain motor carrier buses that transport people. And number two, require that the Metropolitan Council allow motor carriers meeting a certain condition to use the council's bus, or what we did, we took that section out of it. So that's what my my amendment
so
does.
Just to be clear, and members and Representative Detmer, this is now, the bill is amended to apply, I believe, to Greater Minnesota only, is that correct? Or am I hearing that?
It would include Greater Minnesota.
It would include Greater Minnesota, right. Okay.
Basically, what we've done is...
Okay. So let's adopt that amendment first, then, members. It's the A09-0073 amendment. Are there any other questions? I'll move that amendment, but are there any other questions? Mr. Rudin?
If I may, the Department of Transportation on that amendment would like to see a small modification. I believe it's on line 1.17. If we could delete the words "and certified," and if I could just explain the reasoning behind that. MnDOT does not want to be required to certify that these drivers have received training. We would like them to receive the training, but we don't want to have to set up a whole entire program to go out and certify that people have received the training. And so I think if we just deleted "and certified" on 1.17, that would address the department's concerns.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, are we incorporating that change into the delete all amendments, or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll move that change. Okay. Does everyone have that? It's to delete the words "and certified."
And then, if I might, I have a question about the change in the language. By doing that, maybe I misunderstand this, but. And I'm going to have to get the cobwebs out with some help. Did paragraph B at one point allow non-transit buses to use the shoulder? Are we? Does the language in the delete all amendment limit who can use the shoulders by deleting all of that language about a motor carrier, 40 passengers or more, and then the new language saying that it has to be regular route and metro mobility?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I believe you're correct. We do currently allow private charter buses to operate on the shoulders. It's my understanding that they typically do not, even though they have the authority, because their drivers generally haven't been trained to do that, and they just don't feel comfortable driving on the shoulders because they tend to be narrower than the regular travel lanes. But I believe you're correct that this would no longer allow that to happen.
And if I might, Representative Detmer, was that your intent in your bill to constrain the types of buses that can use it, or was it your intent to just allow this outside of the seven, allow current practice outside of the seven county metro area?
Mr. Chair and Representative, my intent was to just allow the outside use.
When maybe Mr. Barres might be able to help us, but I don't want to adopt a delete all amendment that takes away rights of bus, and because this was a fight a number of years ago, and maybe Mr. Kane can shake his head if he has any recollection, or maybe he has as many cobwebs as I do, but it was a big issue in letting other providers besides Metro Transit use the shoulders in a similar way, and so we had a lot of discussion around it, and I mean, I remember talking about the more than 40 passengers, so we wouldn't be talking about like the mini buses or whatever, and allowing this to happen. So if it's not the author's intent to constrain a current right, of transit providers, and the delete all amendment, in fact, does that, I think we have a little problem.
Okay. Let's get a clarification from Mr. Burris, and I also see Ms. McCarthy, and I don't know if she wants to weigh in on this as well, but Mr. Burris, to Representative Holberg's concern.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the deliberations on motor carriers of passengers, private companies being able to use the shoulder predates me, so I'm not actually sure about that. I'd defer to others on that discussion, and I would agree at first blush. This is the first time I've seen the amendment, but it looks to me as well offhand like there would be a removal of that authority in the amendment.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, if I might, who prepared the delete all amendment for you, or who's bringing this measure forward? Is this a Met Council bill, or?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I believe Mr. Shetman from the Met Council is working with Representative Detmer, and then when MnDOT saw the amendment, we just had that small modification that I just mentioned, and I don't believe Mr. Shetman is here currently, but Mr.
McCarthy is here, though.
Yeah.
My goal, members, would be to just make sure that MnDOT and the Met Council are on the same page on this, and things aren't being constrained, and we can make sure the agencies are together here. So, Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Arlene McCarthy, Director of Transportation Services for the Metropolitan Council. Yes, I believe the intent here is to have those providers who provide regular commuter-type service. And that would include, today, the Met Council does contract with some private providers to provide regular route service. And they do use the shoulder. So Metro Transit, as well as private contractors under contract to Met Council. And I believe this says operated under contract with the Met Council. And then we do, through our contracts, they do have that training to allow the use of the shoulder.
Right, and
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair and Ms. McCarthy, was it Met Council's intent to constrain the use of the shoulders by the other entities that now have that right?
I would want to be clear from MnDOT on who has that right today. I think we essentially wanted it to be people that are providing some type of regular commuter type service rather than wide open type charter services.
And, Mr. Chair, I think that, I would not support the constraining of the use of shoulders by those that are allowed to do it under current law. I don't feel comfortable if we take a delete-all amendment that takes away that hard-fought right that was very controversial when it was enacted, and we, on a bill that originally introduced, just looks like we're going to let commuter buses to run on the shoulder outside of the 7-county metro, and by virtue of a delete-all amendment, change a policy that goes beyond that. I'm uncomfortable with that occurring without having the opportunity for those that provide charter bus services that currently have that right and have no clue that that's what we're proposing to do in a delete all amendment committee.
Representative Morrow, and then I have a couple of ideas about how to proceed. Representative Morrow.
Very closely then, Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Holberg. I know that there's regular service, say, between the Twin Cities and Mankato. I don't know if it's under a contract or not under a contract, but it's a regular commuter service. But I share your concern about deleting this language, at least without hearing from the folks who are providing this type of service.
Other members, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, in that discussion, we don't provide for what we call over the road. It was basically transit, wasn't it? And metro transit. This bill opens it up, and we don't provide for school bus or small individual non-scheduled carriers or where they are on a fixed time, as I remember. Isn't that correct?
Well,
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Chair Leader, I think if you look at the language that's being struck in the delete all on lines 111 and 112, and this gets back to the cobweb issue, but my memory is that there was quite a lot of discussion That some of the issues were like buses that ran people out to Mystic Lake or charter kind of bus service, that we felt that they were given the right to use the shoulders, like Metro Transit buses had that right, if they were like buses with more than 40 passengers. And we as a policy, as a legislature, granted them that right, I'm thinking somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 8 years ago is when this policy was changed. And there were compelling reasons for why we should grant the same expediency, if you will, to other types of buses that we did to Metro Transit or Met Council operators.
Members, I think what we have here is just a process question as much as concern about a policy. I'm particularly sensitive. I think Representative Morrow raised a good point. Representative Detmer, you know, what I would just like to do here is just lay your bill over just for a week. And now we're on the public record. People know that this conversation is happening. You can kind of, you know, continue to work with the Met Council and MnDOT and for those other stakeholders in this conversation, you know, they have a week now and they want to weigh in. We're going to have your amendment on the web, and you know, then I think we can come back a week from today and finish up the discussion. Is that okay with you, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I agree, and I want to thank you, Representative Holberg, for bringing this to my attention.
Right.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, I would ask that they have some conversations with committee members. I mean, I myself do not want to take away that right. Mr. Kane was kind enough to enlighten me a little more. This had to do with, like, Greyhound buses, and so, I mean, I would be much more comfortable if you came in with a delete-all amendment that expanded Met Council authority, and, in fact, all buses, the authority outside the Seven Counties metro area, so that we just have continuity across the state, as opposed to taking away one group's rights. So I think there's an easier way to fix this and not have a problem.
Okay. All right, a couple of process issues here, members, and Representative Detmer. We haven't adopted the amendment, and I understand from the staff that, you know, that's not going to increase public discussion anyway, because we wouldn't officially be able to get that onto the web. So I think what we should do is just lay over your bill as is, and then revisit this in a week, and hopefully some of these cobwebs, as Representative Holbrook says, can be worked through. So I'm going to just lay your bill over, and you know, then we're going to revisit these questions. So thank you very much. This is a very important issue, and you know, if it enhances transit service in the state, that we want to get to all that.
I guess this is a good lesson for all of us. Make sure we have a bill come forward that we intended to have come forward.
Well, but that's okay. this is pretty common, Representative Detmer. I wouldn't worry too much about it. Yeah, it's fine, and it's just a good process, and we're going to revisit in a week. So thank you, members.
Thank you.
Okay, so House File 672 is laid over, and now we'll proceed with House File 575. Our marquee bill of the day. Every this time, is someone, do you have anyone lined up to make the motion, or do you want me to? Okay, Representative Zellers?
I will move the
bill. Okay, Representative Zellers moves that House File 575 be recommended to pass, and then we're going to go to the Education Policy Committee from here, Representative Mariani. So that's the motion before us. Is there an amendment, Representative Simon?
There is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a DE2 amendment.
Okay, we are checking to see if that's been distributed. Okay, I think Mr. Burris has a copy of the amendment, and we'll have to make copies and get it distributed. Can you proceed with an overall conversation about the bill before we adopt that amendment?
Absolutely, and maybe that's best anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and I appreciate your time today in hearing House File 575. I want to first thank some of the co-authors of this bill, Representative Leader, Houseman, Holberg, Newton, and Zellers, most of whom, I think all of whom, are either, if not on this panel, then on Representative Leader's Committee. So I thank them for being co-authors here. I think they understand, perhaps because they've seen this bill before, that this is a method of instruction that is effective, popular, and safe. And safety is the most important thing, of course. I want to make sure that we understand what the scope here of the bill is, and many of you saw this last year too. This only applies to permit instruction. Remember, in Minnesota, there are 30 hours of sort of classroom permit instruction to get your driver's permit, and then there's the 6 hours, I think it is, for behind-the-wheel instruction. This doesn't touch the latter. It doesn't touch the behind-the-wheel instruction, only the permit instruction, only those 30 hours. Secondly, I think it's important to remember this is only an option. This is only adding an option to the menu that's already there. Right now, students have a couple different options. They can take it in school, or they can take it in a separate sort of driving school or academy. I, for example, took mine at AAA in St. Louis Park. That's where I took my own driver's ed instruction. Some people do it in the school. This would just add that third option on the menu. It's not a mandate of any kind. If families have no interest, if it doesn't fit their needs or the needs of kids in the family, they don't have to do it at all. It just adds it as an option. And the other thing I would stress, that the language of the bill demonstrates, is this only applies to programs that are approved by the Department of Public Safety. And I think that's important because that gives a second backstop here. There are really two backstops, as I like to call it, for the possibility that somehow, and this applies to all driver's ed instruction, regardless of the mode or method, there are two backstops as far as I can see. One is, obviously, the test. If somebody doesn't pass the test, they can't get the driver's permit. And if they don't learn the material, they're not going to pass the test. So that's a sort of a firewall right there. But the other firewall is that nobody can even get into this business, whether it's online, classroom, public, private, whatever, unless they are approved by DPS. And DPS already has some standards, some curriculum standards, so we're not reinventing anything here. There's nothing new. One interesting item is that in Minnesota, as in most states, I've been told even perhaps every state, after age 18, the standards are considerably relaxed. In other words, what we're talking about here only applies to those who have not received their permit or their license up till age 18. After that, it's considerably more lax. So as it is right now under current law, kids who think that the driver's ed classes, the permit or behind the wheel, are too onerous, take too much time, maybe they're too expensive, they can just wait until they turn 18 if they want to do that, and then they don't have to abide by virtually any of these rules at all. So that's already in current law. And our estimate is, and I think someone from DPS here is here and they can correct us, correct me if they think that I'm wrong, but our best estimate is that about a third of kids who are eligible wait until after 18. That's about 65,000 kids per year on average who wait anyway and don't get any of the instruction we're talking about anyway. So there's already sort of that loophole, if you will, and that's for your purview on another day if you want to do that. So I think when it comes to online driver's ed, 12 states already have it. Between a third and a half of the United States is already under this regime, already has these rules, already has this as an option, and it is only an option, not a mandate, another item on the menu for families to choose. And they include states like California, Florida, Texas, some of the big ones. So it's about between a third and a half of the states, or a third and a half of the population, already lives under this right now. just a little procedural history, Mr. Chair, as I know you know. This bill was around last term, I think partly in 07, partly in 08. And it was a bill similar to this to start with. It passed this panel. It went to Representative Leaders. And then we decided to take a different turn in the Finance Committee. It was taken out, and what was put in its place was a study. And that study came back, and all of you should have it in your packets. This is a study by the Department of Public Safety. It's 18 or 19 or 20 pages, and I think we all had this mailed to us anyway. But this is the study that you really, starting with you, commissioned. And if I could summarize the study, it's very thorough, I think, and they did a very good job. They surveyed the 12 states. And I just want to talk about a couple of excerpts that I think are particularly important for your deliberations today. Page 17, for example, of the report says, quote, DPS does not necessarily, I should set the table here a little bit. Having gone through the 12 states, evaluated their programs, and looked at the safety records where available, crash records where available, sometimes, many times they weren't available, they saw that perhaps because these are relatively new, perhaps for other reasons,
there isn't a lot of data to work with. So they said, quote, DPS does not necessarily view the lack of research as a barrier to the implementation of internet-based driver education in this state. Minnesotans are accustomed to breaking new ground, end quote. And then on the next page, or two pages later on page 19, it says, quote, upon examining internet-based programs in 12 states, DPS found no evidence to date indicating whether teens who receive internet-based instruction are more or less likely to commit traffic violations or to be involved in crashes. As I said earlier, DPS already has curriculum content standards that they use for current providers of driver education, both behind the wheel and classroom instruction. And I want to note that there is a fiscal note for this bill. The only fiscal note, tellingly, I think, is for rulemaking. It's not for coming up with, it's not new FTEs for having to, you know, somehow evaluate this flood of online providers that would come into the state. And I think that's sort of telling. It's just for potential rulemaking. I think it's $32,000. And a very legitimate question in this budget climate would be, well, $32,000 is $32,000, and you know, it's arguably $32,000 more than we have. And I want to tell you that at least one online driver provider has already indicated that they are willing, and this isn't something to do, I would imagine, in this committee, but maybe later, they would be willing to pay a per head fee to the DPS to defray those costs. So that doesn't speak for the entire industry, but they would be willing to do that. And I know that there are some other driving schools that would do that as well. But at least one large online provider has already indicated that they'd be willing to do that, pay a per-head licensing fee to the Department of Public Safety to defray that $32,000 cost. So hopefully that's that'll bear fruit later, and I know that's not necessarily the purview of this committee. Before I hand it over to the testifier, and I know your time is short, I wanted to note that in your packet you have letters from various supporters. I'm not going to repeat the content there. One of them is from Minnesotans for Safe Driving. One of them is from a driving school, a conventional driving school owner, and then you have some actual student letters in there. I think a couple are even handwritten from students of driver's license or driver's permit age that think this is a good idea. It's been popular, particularly in rural areas, members, where this really enables families to have some flexibility in their schedule and is conducive to, you know, their everyday life. I want to bring up one thing, one more, I promise, one more, before I hand it over to the testifier and introduce him or have him introduce himself. And I don't mean to be flip about this, but I think some of you saw this last year, and it's in your packets as well. I know there's always some hesitation whenever we're doing something new, particularly with technology, that we're leaping into this new world, and it can seem scary and maybe unproven or untested. But I'd like, if you could, to look at the handout you have from here. Right now in Minnesota, I mean, you really can't make this stuff up. Right now in Minnesota, it is currently legal and advertised to learn how to be a driver's ed instructor online. You can do it right now. Here it is. Here's the ad right there, MinnSU, MinnesotaOnline.org. Right here, I think the address is, can't see the address, but basically it's advertising and letting folks know that at MinnSU, if you want to learn to teach this stuff, you can learn how to do that online. So I just want to allay the fears, and I'm not poo-pooing anyone who asks legitimate questions, as they all are, about safety. That should be our number one criterion here, no question, bar none. But I would say, I think we have to just realize what we already have on the books, and that we're already saying that drivers and instructors themselves may learn how to do this online. I think that's something that's important for your consideration. So without any further delay, I'd like to introduce Mr. Gary Tifrin, who some of you may remember from last time, to give a presentation. I would just ask one thing, just as a courtesy, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. He has a presentation. It's not that many slides. He'd like to get through it first, instead of being interrupted with questions. He's happy to answer any questions, but he'd just like to explain himself first, and then he'll take any questions, if that's just you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Simon. I want to make sure that this is maybe less than 5 minutes. If it's more than that, I'm just going to have to cut it off. So. Okay. But members will defer questions to the author and the proponents till after this presentation. But I will cut you off in about 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Tifrin. I'm co-founder and chief operating officer of DriversNet.com. Again, as as Representative Simon made clear, that we're just offering one option for minutes of a team. And I want to be clear here that we're talking exclusively about the classroom piece, not the behind-the-wheel piece. One of the effects of offering an online option is that it can free up instructor, very valuable instructor time, to focus on the behind-the-wheel piece where the real skill building takes place. Referring to the DPS study that was just published this February, the DPS found no evidence to date indicating whether teens who receive internet-based instruction are more or less likely to commit or traffic violations or be involved in crashes. And on page 17, the DPS, page 18, the DPS has four implementation recommendations that I would very briefly like to speak to specifically. Number one was a question about security, ensuring the identity of the participant in the course. And much like we do in a brick-and-mortar environment, what one does is erect obstacles so that it's not cost-effective to cheat. I would submit that our point of departure cannot be that citizens of Minnesota are trying to somehow game the system. Moreover, there is ultimately the test at the DPS that must be passed. And so how we do this is we have personal validation questions that are culled from the registration portion of the signing up for the course, as well as content validation questions. Now, these questions taken together are sprinkled throughout the course and ensure, and then they are timed. If there are two, and in some cases three failures, then that student is required to call in and do a voice verification. And different states have very different requirements. Ultimately, this is going to be up to the Department of Public Safety in Minnesota to identify what they find satisfactory. Secondly, internet-based curricula is designed so as to ensure parent involvement. Now, I want to stress that in Texas, the parent-taught course, or in Oklahoma, parent-taught course, is a radically different animal than what is currently available in Minnesota, where there is a requirement that 6 hours be done behind the wheel and that 30 hours in the classroom be done with a licensed instructor. But in the driversed.com parent course, I was trying to think of what could graphically represent how we have parents involved, but really, this testimonial really captures it very well from an educator in Texas who simply emphasizes, you know, he would recommend this to parents, that his daughter, she had to work by virtue of participating in the parent-taught course. The third is the level of interactivity. The DPS really wants to ensure that it's an interactive course and that it not be mistaken for a book online. And that's certainly the driversed.com course. It is not to be mistaken with a manual that's just uploaded to the web. We deploy modular course design, fully navigable. There are lots of assessments, 2D and 3D animations. I'd like to just take a quick moment and show you a little bit of what that looks like. So as you can see here, there's a 3D graphic representation of what an intersection looks like. So in the classroom setting, we're not just discussing an intersection. The students here have an opportunity to actually see what an intersection looks like. In this 2D case study, students are confronted with a traffic situation, which then they're asked a question to respond, and then they can see the consequences of that choice.
The night before, I was with them.
Unsurprisingly, we used full motion video, much like one would use in a classroom setting. And so, with the ability to block broadband and internet access,
I never realized that you shouldn't survive like that.
And then this is more the narrative graphic course slides, so to speak. So as you can see, this is the furthest thing from a driving manual uploaded to the web. It's a fully integrated course. Naturally, assessments here, but in the interest of time, I'll move on. The fourth and final concern is built-in timing safeguards. And we at driversed.com, for example, have a proprietary technology that can evaluate the content on a course element and then time that course element appropriately. If the DPS has stricter timing requirements, we can turn that up, we can ramp it up. The idea is that each course element will have a dedicated time allotment before a student can advance further. As Representative Simon made clear, this is not really new. We've been operating around the country, serving a third to a half of the population of the United States, really for the last 8 years. And you can see that we're regulated by regulatory agencies around the country, from DMVs to DPSs to Departments of Education.
We're also a preferred, in our case, representative.com, we also work very closely with schools and school districts, from the Texas Virtual School to the Florida Virtual School to the Houston Independent School District. I'd be happy to provide you with testimonials from teachers, from the Driving School Association of the Americas, from the second largest, from the second largest publisher of the second most popular driver's ed book, from Del Mar Learning, which publishes License to Drive, and so forth. One of the great advantages of online education is that it can be administered. So the DPS, of course, has natural limitations on how it can monitor in-class courses. Once an instructor's license, there are natural limits to how often those instructors can be monitored by a regulatory agency. That's just not the case online. There's a uniformity of instruction whereby the DPS can have access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and identify precisely how each individual student is doing. We have a second-by-second footprint of student participation, as well as, of course, content naturally. Best practices. And to my mind, the important thing to understand here are the benefits of online learning, that it's on-demand learning, that the location is such that it's much more convenient. There isn't so much traffic driving to and from driving schools. There's increased motivation because the students get to elect at what time they take the course, not when they're tired after school, but they can decide when best suits them. There's better quality control, that is to say the DPS can step in at any time and say we want more attention paid here or there, increased safety, greater flexibility, improved accountability, faster revision. The minute you change something having to do with traffic laws, we can update that in a matter of days. We don't have to reprint textbooks, and it's learner control.
Mr. Siffern, we have a number of other testifiers on both sides, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest in this committee back and forth, and we have another bill. So I'm just saying, maybe if you could just conclude. I don't want to cut you off just suddenly here, but just if you could wrap up, that would be great.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Allowing this option really expands the universe of those people taking driver's education that are simply not waiting to age out of it. This is particularly important for families in rural areas who might be underserved by traditional modes of driver's education, high-achieving students who can't possibly take a week off during spring break because they have an away game, and working families where the families work after school and after school can't drive their teens to and from driver's education courses. So just one option. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I know that Representative Swales has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to Representative Simon's comments about Minsky. The gentleman who is taking over my classes for me this spring is an English teacher, yes, but he is also the driving instructor for our high school and did get his online training through Minsky, but I can guarantee you that it was several college credits. It was interactive with a professor. Even though driving instructors were spread out around the state of Minnesota, they were having dialogue with one another. So it was very intensive, and it required a lot of hours also on the St. Cloud campus. So I don't think that we can equate these, so I would just like to offer that as a comment on we're not comparing apples and apples here when we talk about that.
Would Representative Simon or anyone on the panel want to respond, or should we just move on to our next testifier? Okay. Are there any other questions at this point from the committee? Representative Fortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question about the interactivity. My kids are always on the computer, and they're really active in sports, and when they get to that age, I can't imagine how we're going to shoehorn driver's ed into our schedule. And I've already seen the high school slots we have to pick to put things in, and if my son signs up for driver's ed, that means he can't take Spanish. So what I'm wondering is, how do you check to make sure it's the kid that they say it is that's taking the class, and that they're the ones answering the question and not their friend, the driver from up the block?
Yeah, that's Mr. Chairman,
that's difference.
Thank you. That's a very good question. We face this everywhere we go. Well, with the security questions that I outlined earlier in the presentation, where we would ask personal information that's sensitive one would not necessarily share, and moreover, these transactions are, one purchases the course with a credit card. 15-year-olds don't have credit cards. It's there's parents' responsibility, ultimately, when the parent pays for the course, and we have correspondence with parents by email also, so that they're kept abreast of their students' progress.
Just a follow-up.
Representative Hartman.
If a person buys this course, can they make their kid do it twice?
Yes, indeed.
Thanks.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you were describing that, I'm not even quite sure why that would be a concern for anyone, because presumably after the course is taken, they have to pass a test. And if you've not been sitting in front of the computer, you're not going to pass the test. I mean, it's like if I had a book to read, but I had somebody else read the book for me, I'm not going to pass the test. So that one, I'm even confused about why we sort of have to prove that they're sitting there, because the test is going to prove.
This is different. Representative, one reason, and you'll forgive me, this is getting a little granular, is because online education, the traffic safety arena, started with online traffic school, and that, which is it's called differently in different jurisdictions, ticket dismissal or diversion courses, that sort of thing. And part of the aim there was that it be punitive. So the so legislators were interested in making sure that this person is the one suffering through it. That's just not the case in driver's ed. It's not designed to be punitive. It's designed precisely for what you're describing, which is to prepare the students, which ultimately the test was given by the Department of Public Safety.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, do the students receive written materials in addition to the online training?
Mr. Chair?
There's a difference.
Thank you. That ultimately depends on the requirements by the state regulatory agency, in this case, the Department of Public Safety. So all of our approved courses comply with those requirements. So in Texas, where it's a parent-taught course, yes, there's a lot of supporting material. In California, no, everything is done online. We're currently approved by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to provide a booklet correspondence course to homeschooled students only. And it seems a little online is a better technology than sending books through the mail. So the written material, to my mind, is not a requirement, but ultimately that's the DPS's call.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, when we passed the fine piece of legislation we heard last week from Representative Rukavina saying that you can go 10 miles over to get passed around somebody, how long is it going to take you to update your system here so they get the right information?
Mr. Chair, really 20 minutes, but we do a lot of quality control, so it will take us about a day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, if there are no additional questions at this point, it may be appropriate now for, I would assume, Representative Zellers to move the DE2 amendment. And, okay. Representative Simon, do you want to brief us on the DE2 amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I take responsibility for the need for the DE2 amendment. There was a mix-up in terms of the drafting. The DE2 reflects what I thought was going to be the bill that was jacketed, and that's merely to take it beyond just homeschooled students and make it an option available for everyone.
This is a pretty important amendment, members. Do you have any, is there any discussion? It's actually getting it in the bill that the author wants it, but okay. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails, and we do now have officially House File 575 in the way the author would like it. We have two more testifiers in favor of this, and I'd like to now call on Debbie Brudholm, owner of Training Wheels Driver Ed, and welcome back to the committee. You're a veteran of the Transportation Policy Committee.
It seems so, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for that wonderful welcome, and thank you, committee members, for being so kind to hear this bill today. As you know, my name is Debbie Prudhomme, and I own the second largest driving school here in Minnesota, Training Wheels Driver's Ed, and I also serve at the highest level of our national organization. I founded an association geared towards professional instruction in 1997, and I have trained, literally my best qualification for speaking on this issue is that I've trained tens of thousands of teenagers. And I just, Representative Simon and Mr. Shiffrin did a fantastic job of outlining the issues. I would just like to say as we begin to debate this, you'll see that the driving school industry is divided on this, but I do not believe it is a safety issue. It is not a safety issue. Otherwise, I would not recommend it. I've dedicated my life to team safety, and I would not recommend something that would hurt teams. I also would just like to bring to your minds the three important points that we discussed, which were, seems to be a little problematic for the opposition, which is security and fraud. I believe that we've addressed that. But I do want to say really quickly about this access to driver education concept. There, if you look at it, and you said there were a third more people, teenagers, you know, the people who are most at risk, most vulnerable, if there were a third more of them that would have access to driver education, I can't believe that we would go in the right direction to improving our educational system. And there are so many people that drive illegally between the age of 16 and 18 out of practical needs. You know, if it's not accessible, I was just doing some calculation, you know, a family could spend $40 to $50 more dollars just in gas and mileage on a car traveling 10 or 15 times to a remote location for a traditional classroom. So this is not a safety issue. In fact, I believe it will bring some consistency to education in general, and I believe the additional access is just a huge benefit to all of us. And also, just to also mention the quality of instruction, I think that we've addressed that here, but I would love to see a day when we could, on the internet, access the Minnesota Trucking Association video, the LifeSource video, all of those Minnesota-specific resources that we have, and we have a ton of them. But you know what I have found? I've walked into driving schools and to program directors, and I've found them on the floor because people are overburdened in time and management and those kinds of issues, and sometimes those resources that we have available don't make it to the streets. And I would love to see those specific Minnesota resources reach all of the teens or have the ability. And also, you know, this is an option, and it's only going to be chosen by the people that it will work for. I happen to believe the core value of the Minnesota teen is one based on honesty and integrity and earnest behavior. And I don't believe that people are just out to scam, and I also don't believe that people take the path of least resistance. I believe people have a good sense of what is good for them, and this option is no threat to anyone. It's just simply an option. It could be time-saving, money-saving, and I hope that you will support it.
Thank you. Are there questions, Representative Rudolph?
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Simon. Now, is this, as I understand it now, with the amendment, this is open to everyone to take it. Are these materials now open or available for regular classrooms? I mean, current instruction in schools? In schools, can they access it from you?
Oh, yes. We try to work with schools. As you can see from the presentation, we work with lots of schools and school districts all around the country. I do want to caution the existing driversed.com online course for Minnesota is not DPS approved, right? Because this is what we're discussing here. So if you were to look at it today, none of the safeguards are in place. But once, hopefully, this is approved, then indeed we would work, in addition to working with the CPS, in addition to working with commercial schools, we would also seek to work with public schools and private schools here in Minnesota to make this material available to them as well.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I certainly encourage that. It looks like a good program to be used in, I think, in school classrooms. Frankly, Representative Simon, you may have had me on the homeschool. I'm having more difficulty now with the amendment.
Representative Sellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Sifrin, we had a question come up as you were talking about this. Do you offer, besides just the beginning driver's ed course, do you offer any of the online courses for, you know, continuing, say, if you renew your hazmat license or certain different... Maybe this is showing my newbie status on the committee, but do you offer those others? Because I think of an over-the-road truck driver and taking a day off of work, or a courier taking a day off of work to go and renew my license, when it would mean dollars out of my pocket.
Okay. Different.
DriversEd.com focuses exclusively on driver safety education. And I can tell you that internally we've had lots of discussions, we have these online tools, let's do all online training. No, we're founded by a 25-year veteran of the driving school industry who himself carries licenses in California, Nevada, Georgia. We focus exclusively on driver safety education.
Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, so you're way ahead of us. Mr. Chairman and Representative Simon, I do want to thank you because, Mr. Sifrin, I was one of those radically different animals that you spoke of. I learned out in a field, you know, on probably, I shouldn't say on tape, how old I was to drive in a on a farm. There are some mediums that are going to be a lot better. I took all my, you know, the proper driving from an instructor, a teacher in school. To me, this would have made a lot better difference, especially from a, you know, coming from a rural standpoint. We're 25 miles from town. This is an option that we didn't have then that I'm glad we have now. And I really do think for some kids, this is the best medium for them. My wife's a third grade teacher. There are certain kids that will, the interactive part of that, part of your presentation, you know, is far more appealing and far more simple for them to understand than reading it out of a book. So I thank you and compliment you again for for a Metro guy who is in a rural area. This is going to be a great thing, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, are there any other questions for Ms. Prudhomme? We have one more testifier in favor of the bill, and that's Fred Schreiber from the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. Is Mr. Schreiber here? Oh, I think we had that incorrect then. Are there any? Is there anyone here who wishes to testify in favor of the bill?
I would.
Okay. Proceed to the table and identify yourself for the record, and please be as brief as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My name is David Baranek.
Hello. Chair. No one tell Representative Kelleher about this.
I wasn't asked to come run up here, so if I'm a little bit nervous, then that might be. I own a business. I own a driving school for the last 7 years. It's called Classic Driving School, DVA Training with Driver's Ed. And anyways, you know, I've taught thousands of students how to drive, and I can say that you cannot teach somebody who does not want to learn. I guess the opposition might say that you know, the traditional way of classroom training is the good way to go, but I would ask them how many times that they've walked into a classroom and tried to teach somebody who's falling asleep, or if they're hungry. You can't teach somebody who does not want to learn. And I've taught, you know, many students, and I actually just had a class the other day, and we went over this topic, and I had 29 students in there, and all 29 of them said that they would have liked the option of online classroom. And I think that it's in the best interest of the students and the parents, because it will make the parents have more obligation to be involved in their lives. If you don't mind me having just a few more seconds here, I think that the bottom line is that teachers might believe that they would lose money, some teachers, and I think that we're putting an income in front of saving lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you repeat your last name for our record, then?
David Baranek. He's in boy, E-R-A-N-E-K.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Baranek. I don't know if there's any particular order if those who are opposed to this have a plan here. Otherwise, I can start to just call names. I have Charles Hasten and Mary Madden and Kathleen Roan and Fred Schreiber and Jan Alflager. And if all of you, when you take your seats, could state your name, and if you think there'll be a challenge with the spelling of it, spell it out for us. So,
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for allowing me to testify today on House File 575.
My name is Chip Hyson. It's pronounced Hyson, but
okay,
spell the way you pronounced it. And I'm the owner of Safeway Driving School, the state's largest commercial driver education school. If my name sounds slightly familiar, Hyson, I think I can explain the reason why. You might have seen in the Star Tribune yesterday that my daughter was the athlete of the week.
Congratulations.
I'm a proud parent, and I'm telling everybody.
Congratulations.
Just as background, Safeway operates in 18 locations across the metro area, teaching about 4,000 students a year. And Safeway is opposed to allowing the complete replacement of 30 hours of teacher-led classroom curriculum with internet-based curriculum. As you know, driver education is more than just memorizing signs and road markings. We believe that it's largely about attitude, an attitude to say no when too many children pile in the car, an attitude to take a kid's keys, a friend's keys, rather than let them drive after drinking, an attitude to ignore the text message chime while they're driving. It's the right attitude that gets teen drivers home safely every night. The classroom instruction offered by Safeway and hundreds of other schools in the state instills a proper attitude and a sense of responsibility about driving. Instructors add local, real-life stories that students have heard in the paper. They can bring in speakers like law enforcement officers, EMT workers, insurance agents. Live curriculum offers the benefit of an adaptable curriculum. At Safeway, for example, we incorporate lectures, self-study guides, group discussions, quizzes, videos, 3D interactive software, which allow instructors to determine which methods are preferable in a given situation. A teacher can ask and answer questions, allowing the classroom experience to follow the questions, thoughts, curiosity of the students. An internet-based curriculum simply is not as flexible. One size fits all. You do have a copy of the report from the legislature prepared by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, which analyzed the status of the 11 internet-based driver ed programs in other states. There was one 12, but one has rescinded internet courses. What was striking to me about reading the report was that no state has done a comprehensive study to determine if test scores, crash rates, or driving violations differ between internet students and classroom students. The proponents of this bill correctly claim that no study has disproved the effectiveness of the online driver's ed. And it's true. But what they didn't emphasize was that there are no studies. And that's the point. Little is known about the effectiveness of internet-based programs. So let's be clear. The proponents of the bill want to modify a driver's ed process that almost everyone agrees works well for a more convenient alternative that no study has proved is as effective. Besides pointing out that no one knows if it works, the DPS report identified that there are problems ensuring the identity of the person taking the course, that the students devote a full 30 hours to the instruction, and that the students don't distract themselves with other activities while engaged in the course. Based on my personal experience, these are well-founded concerns. I'm currently enrolled in the online program of driversed.com. Before yesterday's Senate hearing, I had completed 29% of the course in about 2.5 hours. At that pace, I'll finish the course in about 10 hours. That's one-third of the time we require for classroom instruction. While the proponents yesterday were testifying in the Senate hearing about the security of their program, Senator Saltzman, under my user ID and password, completed lessons for me on the California course whose security measures you just heard about. My favorite car color is blue. My favorite kind of a car is a sports car. You can take this for me if you wish. Both she and I were easily able to override the feature that's meant to pace the students so they don't just flip through the screens as we did. When I was taking the course, just after I started watching the video, the phone rang. By the time my attention got back to the screensaver was up and the video was over underneath it. I completed the lesson. I was never asked a question about the video. There was no validation that I had seen it, and to this day I have no idea what it was about. Now it's fair to ask the question, do all of our students watch every minute of our videos? No, unfortunately they probably don't. But I can tell you this, a teacher is there to make sure their heads are up and the kids aren't talking on the phone, text messaging, multitasking on Facebook, downloading an episode of Gossip Girl, all of which, and more, they will be doing when they take an internet course. All of this points to the fact that the classroom instruction is and should be an integral part of driver's ed. Even the proponents, the producers of driversed.com, recognize this. It's an ultimate irony, but if you watch their Rules of the Road video, there's a segment in it that shows a teacher in a driver's education classroom presenting materials to students
and then answering their questions and role-playing with a student. Now, I guess it makes sense. Because Internet students can't interact with a teacher, they watch a video of other students in a driver ed classroom interacting with a teacher. To me, that's pretty strong validation for the need for teacher-led classrooms. And just like in a driver's ed video, when the lights come on in our classroom, the teacher answers questions, leads a discussion about the lessons that were learned and the choices that were made, reinforces our recurring message of attitude, responsibility, respect, courtesy, judgment. These are what are called teaching moments, and nothing else has the impact of them. Unfortunately, the Internet simply can't deliver teaching moments. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still confused by that argument. Because ultimately, before you get your license, you have to pass two tests. You have to pass a written test to determine do you know the content. And you have to pass a driving test to determine rules of the road and ability to drive. Does it kind of matter how you get there? And if you're describing students who would bypass it and wouldn't sit there, what would be the point? Because they wouldn't be prepared to take the test. I just fail to see that line of argument.
Mr. Eisen.
Mr. Chair. Could I have my associate answer this question?
Hi, my name is Kathleen Rohn. I'm from the science currently. I've owned a driving school in Minnesota for 17 years, but more importantly than that, I'm the behind-the-wheel instructor, I'm the classroom instructor, and I think if I give you the criteria, you'll understand. In order to pass the permit test, there are 40 questions that are either true and false or multiple choice. They're allowed to miss 8. If they fail the road test, they can take it the next day. If they fail the permit test, they can take it the next day. If they fail the road test, they take it 1 week later. I think that as a classroom, if you're only teaching to the test, that's one matter. But what we feel classroom entails is an entirely different matter, and I'll talk more about that during my minutes. But it's a very low scale of what you need to do to pass your permit test. I mean, your lesson is 8 out of 40 questions.
Representative Houseman, do you have a follow-up? Or? Okay. Members, before I call on Representative Ellis, I just again wanted to do my traditional reminder to members and everyone in the public that we have sensitive recording equipment, so if you're texting, all of these things you mentioned, texting on your computer, on your cell phone, please pretend like you're in the car and put those away for the Transportation Committee. And so we can have a good, clear recording of our proceedings today. So thank you for that. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Houseman, you didn't get an answer to your question, so I'll try it a different way. So in the end, if I go and take the permit test, and again, I was the radically different animal that learned out in the barley field how to drive and what the rules of the world were, I still had to read the book, even though I probably knew how to drive better than, you know, some of the people that were taking the test. I still had to go in, learn the material, and then pass the test. Whether or not I was a good road driver or not didn't really matter. It was whether or not I knew the list now, or knew the test. Now, I'm assuming in the materials that you provide, you are teaching the students the materials, the questions that they're going to be asked on the test. So I guess maybe I'm missing how, you know, maybe through the
yes,
sure.
And let's do this up to as well. You could respond, and then I'd like to get to your testimony, and then your colleague's testimony, and then we have another question from Representative Swales, which I know won't be the last one. But what I'd like to do is have all of you get through your testimony. You can respond to this, and then we'll have additional questions from the committee. So, please.
Okay, that's my response to that would be we're a 30-eligible classroom and we have over 20 components that the Department of Public Safety requires us to include. Recently, ones that the House and the Senate have passed is 30 minutes of school bus safety. Not quite as recently, but 30 minutes of organ donation and the such. And my point is that the classroom
when I hear people say, this is just the classroom, it's not behind the wheel. Anyone who has taught classrooms feels that the classroom is as important. We have a lot of material that we need to cover, and it's just a mandate of pretend. It's not just making sure that the students pass the permit test. It's making sure the students aren't in the obituary, doing everything we can to make sure they're not in the court report. I mean, very simply stated, passing the test is probably my third on the list in priority for that student when they enter my classroom.
So, thank you. So if you could proceed with your testimony, and maybe if there were points that were already made by yourself or your colleagues, you don't have to repeat those. So.
Thank you. My name is Kathleen Rowan, like I stated, and I am from northern Minnesota. I'm from the area that is the remote, and what you may be concerned about, whether or not students will be able to get started education. We'll discuss that later, but first of all, I just want to reiterate, classroom is as important as behind the wheel. It's in the classroom where they're taught about attitudes, responsibility, risk management, road rage, driving cooperatively, and critical decision making. Now, my next thing I'd like to do is talk just a little bit about the online survey and the online report. And when we go state by state, if I could refer you to page 5, California is one of the states that does allow online. And if we turn over to page 6, we talk just briefly about the study. And in 2003, the Department of Motor Vehicles in California conducted a study. And a key word in this is the volunteer subject. They didn't randomly pick subjects. They asked for volunteers. And of all the students in California, they had 1,500 student volunteers. And they agreed to partake in this, and at the end of the study, 1,321 completed. Now, I would reason that perhaps if they asked for a study and they asked for volunteers, perhaps the ones who volunteered were maybe the higher motivated type of student, more interested in this type of thing. Now, at the end of the study, they didn't really do any evaluation on whether crash is increased. They didn't do any studies on whether who had the most tickets. They just did a study on the results of the permit test or the knowledge test. And when the Department of Public Safety in Minnesota discussed with DPS of California, California Motor Vehicle identified a serious administrative problem associated with the state's acceptance of internet-based education. This is on page 6. And then they said some businesses offering internet-based driver's education have attempted to circumvent California's commercial driving school license processing. And this situation has created what they described as an enforcement quagmire for California. And then when we go on to the next state, which is Colorado, on page 7, on the bottom it says, in discussion with DPS of Colorado, the Colorado Department of Revenue reported that the state has encountered challenges in auditing the internet-based courses, in ensuring that the companies offering the internet instructions are upholding curriculum standards and are taking adequate measures to prevent students from committing fraud. Of the internet programs that she audited, she found most to be what she described as deficient, and she described only one as good. And then she goes on to say that students have skirted security measures and have finished what were meant to be a 30-hour internet-based course in 4 to 9 hours. And so I think they're right on schedule. Florida, there were no studies done, but Florida does not require those under 18 to take driver's ed. The next state, Georgia, no study. The next state on page 8, Idaho. In Idaho, it's kind of interesting. If you go on to page 9, it says, according to online requirements, Idaho, it says an instructor is in constant contact with students and parents and monitors the progress of each student. Indiana, Indiana terminated the internet-based program after the first year. The next state, Nevada, no studies. Oklahoma, no studies. In Oklahoma, no press statistics. Pennsylvania does not require students under the age of 18 to take driver's ed. Texas is one that, if I've been boring you, I apologize, but Texas is the important one. And so if we look on page 13, Texas, near the bullet, near the middle of the page, it says, parents taught students were, and this included internet-based programs, 12% more likely to be involved in a crash, 25% more likely to be involved in a non-incapacitating injury crash, and 57% more likely to be involved in a serious injury crash than their school-taught peers. And at the bottom of that page, parent-taught teens were nearly three times as likely to be involved in fatal crashes. Virginia. Only students designed by Virginia Department of Education.
I just wanted to, I apologize for the interruption. It's my intention that we vote on this bill today and probably in 15 minutes or less. So I want to make sure that all of the people on your side have a chance to testify.
Okay,
so just budget your time appropriately for the next 10 to 12 minutes.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed in the findings. So.
Okay, but if you had any concluding comments, I didn't want to cut you off.
I do have a concluding comment. Am I allowed for that?
Please.
Okay. I've heard that online driver's education is cutting edge, and I thought about this a lot. And to me, cutting edge driver's education allows for student-to-student and student-to-teacher interaction. It utilizes different modalities, different people in your community. It's continually changing and appropriate to each community. What is appropriate to my community in northern Minnesota may not be appropriate for your community in the metro, what we need to focus on. And that's one of the benefits of having our driver's ed program instructor taught, so we can really see what the student needs to do.
Thank you very much. And so we have next Ms. Madden.
Hi, I'm Mary Madden with Range Drivers Training and the Professional Driving Association of Northern Minnesota. I have been in the driver education business for 34 years. I have taught also thousands of students in northeastern Minnesota. I do feel driving is a privilege, and I think sometimes we forget driving is a privilege. It's not a rite of passage, and it is not something that automatically should be a given at 16. I also believe that many people, like our opponent said, that they wait till 18. My concern is that if they cannot afford driver education prior to 18, how are they going to afford the cost of insurance and responsibility to others on the road by providing that insurance and a well-maintained vehicle to drive and share the road public safety-wise with us. I would also like to expand on the concept of continuity. I believe, as Fred Mottola, a very respected driving industry professional, says, that what happens in the classroom sessions is essential and continuing on into the behind-the-wheel sessions, and that it is a building block in vocabulary. If I have a student coming through another program in the state of Minnesota, in bookwork as now, I can contact that owner, find out exactly what they have done, if they've used a certain method in defense of driving maneuvers, what to expect. But I also, because they have not come through my program, I also waste valuable practical time asking them what words did they use when they learned to make a lane change. Are they using smog? Are they using check, signal check? Or some other ditty that the teacher did. Classroom gives me an opportunity as an instructor to become familiar with that student any short followings they may have. They get familiar, comfortable with me, and they know what to expect behind the wheel, which makes that process a lot more effective. I would be afraid to get, I shouldn't say afraid, because there's not too much that scares me. I'm sitting here after all. But it does concern me to get behind the wheel with a student that's not on the same vocabulary, same defensive driving system, the same thing. And my concern with internet also bases from, I'm not sure that 30-hour course was done by the student for, and what materials were really grasped, or were they regurgitated. If I get a puzzle book for right-of-ways or some other concept, that's an issue of my safety when we're out there behind the wheel, the student's safety, and your safety. If I can address that puzzle book in the classroom, I can, by student and teacher interaction or by a different method, try to resolve that potential problem before we hit the road.
Ms. Madden, if you could finish up the night, because I want to get the resolve for it here, and then we'll...
I have, in this area, and you have the color-coded map, I am the classroom teacher that goes from Orr, which is up here at Crane Lake, in short, down to Cotton. I feel that by what is color-coded here, Minnesota students have the opportunity to take many classes in many locations. I'm going to make two short statements, if you'll allow me, and then I will pass on. I would say students picking this option are going to be your bright, energetic, community, school-involved students. Those students are also at-risk students for falling asleep, fatigue-related crashes. Two-thirds of traffic fatalities occur...
I'm very sorry, because we are really running short on time.
Okay.
I want to get to Ms. Allswagger, and we also, I think, have one more on your side, too. So, Ms. Allswagger.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, Dan Allswagger, Education Minnesota, and I will cut my testimony in half at least.
Thank you.
There's a place for online learning. We all know we're headed in that direction in some areas. But even the courses that students take in the regular K-12 system must be facilitated by a licensed teacher. We do not have that kind of component in this driver's ed online program. Excuse me. Even in higher ed, as Representative Swales mentioned, it is facilitated by faculty members. And the main point that I want to make is the point about public safety. You know, you can study and take a test, whether it's through internet or the classroom instruction. But the DTS study, and I would encourage you to look later at page 3, it says that some of the contributing factors in teen crashes include, and all of these are behaviors. And when you, I'll list them in a second, but as you think about somebody who gets into an accident, it's not necessarily because they don't know the rules of the road. It's because an error in judgment or somebody else's error in judgment. The things that they listed are contributing factors are immaturity, high propensity for risk-taking behaviors, illusion of invulnerability, deficient decision-making, and so on. And so that is why the classroom experience with a face-to-face teacher is critically important for the public safety of not only the teen drivers, but others. And on page 17, my last point, on page 17, this is one of the last statements that they make. What research does exist tends to challenge the assumption that driver education has a positive effect on the safety of young drivers. That begs the question whether implementation of internet-based driver's education should be delayed until more data is available. And we thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. And our last testifier is Mr. Schreiber, and then I have three members that have questions, and then we're going to vote. So, Mr. Schreiber, briefly. Welcome to the committee.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Schreiber. I'm Secretary-Treasurer of the
Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. We do not believe that online driver education should be accepted as a state-approved path to getting a driver's permit at this time. We agree with the Department of Public Safety's conclusion regarding online driver ed. Quotation, internet-based classroom driver education is relatively new, and the efficacy of this form of instruction still is largely undetermined. We feel strongly this is not good enough for Minnesota's young drivers to be. Our organization also realizes that with online learning expanding so rapidly, it may be that eventually online driver ed will prove to be efficacious and be approved by the state. However, we believe that oversight of any teaching learning concept used to educate our young people, including online learning, should be overseen by our state's teaching learning agency, the Department of Education. We believe this bill should be defeated, but if it is not, it should be sent to the House Education Committee to be considered for inclusion in House File 553, this year's comprehensive online education bill. This would ensure that any driver education course offered online in Minnesota would employ best educational practices and meet high educational standards. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say, Mr. Schreiber, that this bill, if it does pass this committee, will be going to the Education Policy Committee. It's ultimately up to the chair of that committee, Representative Mariani, where it goes from there, whether it's included in any omnibus bill. Members, I have Representatives Swales, Holberg, and Zellers. Do you three still want to ask your questions? It's fine if you do, but I
well, I'm not really planning to ask a question. I just
make a point.
I'll make a point. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Simons, I have the deepest and greatest respect for you and as a colleague, and I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree with this bill. I have spent the majority of my 25 years in the classroom teaching 16-year-olds, and I think that Mr. Hasten from the Safely Driving School actually gave us a solution to the problem here, and it was let's have a mixture of both. Let's have the 6 hours of online, but let's have that classroom experience. I know here in Minnesota, when my own children were learning how to drive, that having somebody talking about the current weather conditions, the hazards on local roadways, all those kinds of things, pointing those things out to our young people has made a huge impact on them as drivers. And I, as a parent, felt so much better having that kind of interaction with adults that I knew were, you know, licensed teachers. They were trained to do the job. I really am uncomfortable with a total online approach, particularly given the data that we've seen here.
Representative Simon, if you want to respond, we do have two other members that wish to make points.
Sure, if I could just wait and have 30 seconds at the end to
sure.
Up. I'll just do
okay.
That.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holberg and then Representative Zellers.
Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I will be brief, and I'm getting the same feelings I got last time we heard this bill, and I guess I'm pretty amazed. I see the value. The most of the people that testified against, if not all, had a fiscal interest in fencing online learning out of the options for parents. But this idea that parents can't make a decision on what's best for their kids, I researched two different schools in my community. I went to one, it was like Animal House. It was part of the teaching time. There were kids eating Doritos, and it was like a party in there. It was during class time. I chose the school that seemed to be a little better organized, but was dismayed when I was continually being asked for money so that during break, contained within the 3 hours, they could run to the local grocery store to buy snacks, and that certainly wasn't instructional time. This issue about having to know have the same teacher, the behind the wheel and classroom. I'm sure that given the opportunity to make a sale of behind the wheel instruction, even if they didn't provide the classroom instruction, most, if not all, the testifiers would take that option. And the reality is this is for the permit test. And parents have a degree of responsibility and all these things about judgment, et cetera. There is behind-the-wheel training. There are parents. And it took one of my children almost 3 months to complete their 30 hours because it was a cyclical thing that there were 10 different classes, and so you had to take A through J class. And if you were in hockey and had practice and different things and you missed, the B class, you had to wait a whole other cycle and hope that your schedule allowed to take that. And so for very active kids, it can take months to get their 30 hours to get the right 10 classes to stack up against the schedule. And I think this just makes perfect sense. The example of Indiana canceling their program after 1 year, it wasn't because of a problem. In fact, it said Indiana didn't even evaluate it. So, members, I'm going to vigorously support this, and I think that to say that these classroom programs are the be-all and end-all, they got their own problems, and we as parents have the opportunity to choose the options that best fits the needs of our kids.
Thank you, Representative Holbein. We're going to have Representative Zellers and then vote, but we do have one more short bill. I'm going to have to keep people after school today just for a few minutes because we want to move Representative Leader's bill along today. It should not take long, but just so you know, we'll probably be here until 2:35 or 2:40. Representative Zellers.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Simon, I'll pass my question. Mr. Chairman, in the research we were encouraged to read, I looked through some of the stuff besides having the Indiana example of they canceled the program because they got a commercial driving school to complain. So that was one of the reasons why Indiana took the program away. I looked at Pennsylvania, and there are 6 commercial driving schools and 4 high schools that currently offer Internet-based courses. Mr. Chairman, I think this is more about what we're afraid of, if we're not up to speed with what's going on around us, than it is about safety or judgment or... And Representative Holberg and I, as we were listening to some of the testimony, my parents taught me how to drive in the field. By looking at some of the statistics in here, I shouldn't be going out there then because I'm a danger. I'm going to commit a horrible accident at some point. I think it's more, Mr. Chairman, about what we're afraid of, not what we're able to actually prove. And again, if, as Representative Hausman stated, we still haven't had the answer to that question, Representative Hausman. If you're not prepared to take the test, when you take the test, you'll fail. Whether it's in a classroom, whether it's on the Internet, whether you read it on yourself. I think that's really, Mr. Chairman, the point here, and I thank you for the bill.
I am going to give Representative Erdahl the last committee comment or question, and then we're going to have Representative Simon, and then we're going to vote. Representative Erdahl, the Republican lead, and the honorable member from the Little Crow line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, this will be very quick, but, I agreed that the question wasn't being answered for a time. And then I believe that she actually did answer the question when she said that passing the test wasn't the most important thing that she wanted to do, but preparing kids to safely drive on our roads was her number one objective. And so, in fairness to the testifier, I really do believe that she did answer it.
Okay. Members, I want to thank the members of the public, our committee, for a very, very rich discussion today, and I think we got a good debate here. I'll give Representative Simon the last word as the author, and then we're going to vote. So, Representative Simon.
Thank you for your generosity, everyone, members, and Mr. Chair, for the time here. Quickly, I would say that, this is going, hopefully, with your help, to the Education Committee. And I have to tell you, as is obvious, I hope, there's no way this is getting out of the Education Committee as is. There's no way. It'll go there, and then within their proper jurisdiction, I'm sure there will be curricular discussions and changes about what can be tightened up. I would point out, as Representative Hausman ably did, that we've got, she pointed out one of the big firewalls, and others have too, is the test. The other firewall is GPS approval. They've got to bless this thing. So if it's true that someone can race through this course, or any course, in 10 hours instead of 30, then I would hope and I would expect that GPS will not certify that course. And so we've got really the two firewalls there. And folks, I would just say this is an option. And some of the great arguments we heard, and they're all heartfelt because we all want the same thing here. And I'm not impugning or questioning anyone's motives. I think everyone wants the same thing. But, some of the arguments you heard about in-class instruction are great arguments, fantastic arguments for why you would choose that option for your kids. I don't think they're very good arguments for why you would exclude any other option. So while I might want to send my kid or you might want to send your kid to an in-class a provider, not everyone will, and it might not be good for every kid. So I would just ask with respect if you would send this along to the next committee where I suspect, not being on the committee, I suspect there will be a vigorous discussion about the educational component. Thank you
very much. Representative Zellers renews his motion to have House File 575 passed as amended and sent to the Education Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Stein. Let's do the minutes while Representative Leader is... all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Yes, Representative Champion has a question, though, about the minutes. Maybe I was too quick. Member.
The minutes identifies House File Number 570, which was my bill, and it should be Champion. Champion is the Commissioner of
That's
Public
a very,
Safety.
Very important catch.
And I would hate for someone to think that that Commissioner Champion is now the representative.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chairman, I amend my motion to correct the Champion in all places on paragraph 5-7.
Yes. The motion will revote the motion as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And we have our final bill of the day. Representative Leader, our chair of Transportation Finance, has House File 994, and members, I think this will not take too long, so I appreciate everybody's hanging in there for this. So, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 994 to be recommended to pass and sent to the Transportation Finance Division.
Okay, and I think you have an A1 amendment, is
right.
That correct?
I'd like to move that A1 amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment basically... if you look at it, there was an omission in the title. It basically explains the title. That's basically what it does.
Okay. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. To the bill, Representative Leader. As
Thank
amended.
You, Mr. Chair. The bill deals with hazardous materials and hazardous waste, and you have to be concerned about the difference. Materials is one thing and waste is another. Materials basically are like explosives, fertilizer, and gasoline, and diesel, where hazardous waste is nuclear waste and some of the other, like hospital waste. So what we're dealing with in this bill is eliminating the requirement for another permit to haul hazardous materials. And the reason for that is right now a trucker has basically five permits that he gets. Three of them deal with this hazardous waste and hazardous materials. And two of them are federal and one is state. And what it amounts to, we could eliminate one of the requirements for a permit because the other two permits are basically what it is. And it would absolve them from getting a permit for hauling, not getting a permit. They have a permit with the other two. They're basically the same. But it eliminates the permit requirement for hazardous materials, not hazardous waste, and that's what this bill does. Basically eliminates the one permit that they have to pick up, and the reason for that is they pay for another permit. It's another stop they have to get. What the bill basically has is a fiscal note, and that is, a fiscal note will come up in the next committee.
And okay. Members, this is going to Transportation Finance. Are there any very quick questions at this point? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Leader. Will we be fully examining the bill in Transportation Finance?
You can look at the bill right now. All the new words in the bill are two words, waste and materials. If you look at the bill, the existing statute's there, and we're just taking out the word material and leaving the existing statute the way it is. They still have to get the same requirements, the same permits for hazardous waste as they had now, but it eliminates one permit application for material. They still have two permits.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah,
my question is, will they be having to tell somebody in a position of authority what hazardous material they're transporting? I understand only hazardous waste will have to have a Minnesota permit, but the way I read it, if they have a truck full of a very hazardous chemical and they're going through the state, they don't necessarily have to inform the state anymore. And I just wonder if there's a safety problem if we don't know how many trucks full of hazardous material are in the state.
Yeah, Mr. Zelenka?
Mr. Chair, and if I could, oh, it's Mr. Krogan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They still have the federal permit. They're the same, and they're still going to need the federal permit still on the truck, the two federal permits, and maybe Mr. Krogan.
Mr. Krogan, and then I have a thought about what we ought to do procedurally here. But
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogan. I'm from Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. They would register under the state hazardous waste registration program. There's a federal hazardous waste registration program. And last year, the legislature authorized the unified Minnesota to participate in the unified carrier registration program. They also register to get their U.S. DOT number, and they, of course, register to get their commercial plate. So, Representative Hortman, they would have that registration under the federal. And crossing from another state, it would be also under the Unified Carrier Registration Program.
Representative Hortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just was wondering if the Department of Public Safety was going to testify on the bill, if we're going to address that in Transportation Finance.
Is there anyone from the Department of Public Safety? Well, if you, yeah. And members, I think what we ought to do here, this is actually a fairly big issue, and I think that, you know, the definitions of what hazardous materials are, we may have opponents, we have proponents. It's okay with you, Representative Leader, and members of the committee. We could have a more vigorous conversation about this in Transportation Finance. And members, if members feel strongly about keeping it in here, I'd like to hear from you. Otherwise, Representative Leader, we have a good, we'll have more time, I think, to really delve into this in finance. But I'm sensitive to the members who may want to have a more vigorous discussion here. Is there any discussion about moving this along to finance where we can have a more extended conversation, particularly about some of the environmental implications of this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I don't want to cut off any. You can leave it here and lay it on the table. I don't want to cut off any.
Why don't we do that?
Basically, my concern is the bill has only had two words, and really, I don't think we're going to have a big debate. The big debate is it's going to be the fiscal note.
Okay.
For whatever you do.
Well, members, it seems. I mean, I think those are important words that have some safety and environmental implications, but I'm comfortable having that conversation in the Finance Committee if members here are. Otherwise, we can delay a week and have the conversation here. Is there any quick preferences from members of the committee on that? Okay. Well, Representative Leader, seeing that there doesn't appear to be a lot of objection to moving your bill at least forward to your committee where we can have a more extended conversation, we can do that today. But I do feel that to frame the conversation, we would like to hear from the Department of Public Safety and in the Transportation Finance Committee. And I think if there are environmental concerns with the definition of the word materials and if that causes any concern, we need to hear about that in the Finance Committee as well.
Mr. Chair, again, I just going to leave it later, but maybe the definitions of material are waste and material are in statute right now. So we are not changing any of that at all.
Okay.
But anyhow, we could leave it laying on the table if you want to leave it here until next week.
Representative Hortman?
I'm happy to discuss it in Transportation Finance, but I do think it is a major policy change that we need to have a bigger conversation about. My understanding is the Department of Public Safety is opposed to the bill, so I want to know why.
Okay, well, actually, is that correct? Is the Department of Public Safety opposed to the bill?
They are opposed to it because they're going to lose some money. That's the question we're going to have in finance. Yes.
Okay. Is the Department of Public Safety opposed to this bill for any safety or environmental reasons?
Mr. Chairman, no, we are not.
Okay. then, members, then I think that we should renew Representative Leader's... could you please identify yourself for the record? I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chair. John Kerr. I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management in the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. What we will do is have you back and for a much more extended discussion at the Finance Committee. Representative Leader, do you want to renew your motion on this bill?
I'll renew my motion. That's House File 984, is it? Yeah. We recommend the passage to the Transportation Finance Division.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, members. We will see you next Wednesday.